Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to the NHSCA Sports Hour. This show airs every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/nhsca.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at artist_first. And now on to the show.
Good evening, high school sports fans. This is the NHSCA Sports Hour for June the 7th. I'm Jeff Fisher, host of the show and also the founder and editor-in-chief of High School Football America and highschoolfootballamerica.com. Here for 2 hours worth of high school sports talk tonight on the Artist First Radio Network. Glad you're along. Grab a snack, a good cold drink, and get ready to enjoy a lot of different things to talk about here when we wrap up on the NHSCA Sports Hour. We roll it right into High School Football America at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock, and we'll talk about guests on that show coming up a little bit later in this show. Since we've been off for a couple of weeks, we want to take a look back at the 13th annual NHSCA National Duels held in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Another dandy tournament with 138 teams from 15 states, including wrestlers from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Florida, Maryland, Delaware, Virginia, New Hampshire, Texas, Iowa, Illinois, West Virginia, and Georgia competing, and was the largest field we've ever had in the 13-year existence of the NHSCA National Duels. For those of you that don't know, it's better known as the Battle at the Beach, the Scholastic-style team event contested for wrestlers in three age groups: the high school division, which is grades 9 through 12, the middle school division, grades 6 through 8, and the elementary division, which is grades 4 through 6. Participants on the top four teams in each division all officially declared All-American team members, and our executive director, Bobby Ferraro Jr., saying, you know, this may have been the best yet. I always keep thinking that, you know, we're kind of reaching the top, but each and every year everybody surprises us and it gets better and better. The National Wrestling Duels is the largest dual meet event in the history of scholastic wrestling in America. This year's event includes 138 teams, 30 more than last year, and it was the biggest field in the history of the tournament. Included 70 teams in the high school division, 40 in the middle school division, and 28 in the elementary school division. Let's start in the high school division. Team Griffin Black, they had a streak going as they had won several years in a row, but this year Team Griffin Gold lost just two bouts in pool competition, recording 5 shutouts in 7 matches and outscoring their opponents, their first 7 opponents, by a score of 446-6. That included a 53-3 quarterfinal victory over Michigan Megatron. They added victories of 43-10 over Renegade Elite Black in the semifinals, and then in the championship, they beat the Young Guns Black 30-16. Young Guns Black had held its first opponents to single digits, including a 44-6 victory over Michigan Prime in the quarters. They were pushed to the limit by Diesel in the semifinals, winning 23-21. That was a real nail-biter, and then Diesel prevailed in the third-place match, beating Renegade Elite Black by a score of 34-13. Now, in the middle school bracket, Team Griffin Black went 9-0 to win the middle school division, allowing just 2 of its first 7 opponents to score in double digits, including their quarterfinal victory over Michigan Gold Pitbulls by a score of 54-6. And then Team Griffin Black outscored their first 7 opponents by an average score of 65-6. They edged Golden Cross 33-30 in the semifinals. And in the championship match, Team Griffin Black defeated Young Guns White 35-25. The Young Guns edged Illinois Orange 31-30 in the semis. The third place match also went down to the wire with Golden Cross edging Illinois Orange by a score of 33-32. And let's wrap up by looking at things in the elementary division. 8-0 record for the Storm, and just breezed into the semifinals, including their 85-0 shutout of Weaver Elite. The Storm outscored its first six opponents 440-15, adding to their 46-13 victory over Young Guns Blue in the championship match. The Storm outscored their opponents by an average of 65-6. Malvern Prepped edged SEPA White 35-31 for third place. So again, you know, congratulations to all that competed in Battle at the Beach, the 13th annual NHSCA National Duels, and really appreciate it. And I think it's going to continue to grow year after year. So keep up to date with everything that we're doing at the NHSCA by going to our website. And all you have to do is go to NHSCA.com, and everything tabbed out there for you keeps things in good order, so you can understand what's going on throughout the season with the National High School Coaches Association. Of course, the main thing is becoming a member and taking advantage of all the things that the NHSCA has to offer. A big week for a lot of high school baseball players. If you didn't know it, this past week was the Major League Baseball Amateur Draft, and day one saw 35 high schoolers picked out of the 60 players that were picked on day one. 35 of them were high schoolers. Prospects really, you know, figured heavily into what was going on day one, and it all started at the top with Puerto Rican prep shortstop Carlo Correa going number one overall, kind of a surprise pick by the Houston Astros, and then Georgia outfielder Byron Buxton went number two to the Minnesota Twins. As I said, 35 high schoolers out of the first 60 that were picked. Correa became the first Puerto Rican player to be picked number one in the Major League Draft. The 6'4", 190-pound native of Santa Isabella has a powerful bat, very good speed, given his size and position. Some scouts comparing him to that one guy named Alex Rodriguez. Yes, that's not a surprise given his size. Buxton also earned some pretty impressive comparisons throughout the draft process, with names like Justin Upton and Andrew McCutchen being thrown around. The 6'1", 175-pound outfielder burst onto the scene with a number of impressive showings last summer and held strong performances at Appling County High School this year. Now, Correa wasn't the only high schooler from Puerto Rico who heard his name called on Monday, as the Twins used the first pick of the sandwich round on lanky right-hander Jose Orlando Berrios, and the Los Angeles Dodgers used the 51st pick to take Yesimel Valentin Diaz, a teammate of Correa's, on the Puerto Rican Baseball Academy. Now, many had Lance McCullers Jr. from Jesuit in Tampa, Florida, pegged as a possible top 10 pick, but his slide in the second round was one of the biggest stories of the evening. McCullers, a 6'2", 205-pound right-hander, ended up being selected 41st overall by the same team that picked Correa, that's the Astros. McCullers, the Gatorade National Player of the Year, may have slipped due to high signing bonus demands, and the $1.25 million signing bonus assigned to the 41st pick probably will not be enough to sway him from his commitment to going to the University of Florida. The Astros, who have $11.2 million to spend total on their first 11 picks, will have to do some creative budgeting if they want to sign both Correa and McCullers Jr. High school teammates factor prominently into day one also, according to Max Preps. Harvard Westlake in Studio City, California, their pitching aces, Max Fried and Lucas Giolito, were both selected in the first round. Fried is a 6'3", 170-pound left-hander, heard his name called seventh overall by the San Diego Padres, and Fried, who transferred to Harvard Westlake for his senior year after his old school cut its athletic department, had a dominant spring. No surprise that he went in the top 10. So again, congratulations to all of the high schoolers. Now, a couple got a little bit more notoriety than most, and really that's because of what dads have done. Cal Ripken and Matt Matheny, well, their kids were both selected in the Major League Baseball draft. Heard their name tapped, and they were tapped by the same teams that dad's associated with. Ripken, the son of former Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr., went to the Orioles with the 612th overall pick. That was in the 20th round. Ripken is a standout at Gilman in Baltimore, Maryland. Ripken, a 6'6 first baseman. Of course, his dad, Cal, was a second-round draft pick, number 48 overall back in 1978. He played 21 years for the Orioles, including that big record, breaking the Iron Horse Lou Gehrig's record of consecutive games. Cal Ripken Jr. 2,632 consecutive games. Ryan Ripken is committed to South Carolina, batting .377 with 25 RBI this year and 20 runs scored in his high school season. He also had a good record on the mound of 4-1 with an ERA of 2.30. Now, Tate Matheny is a six-footer from Westminster Christian in St. Louis. He's a center fielder and son of, as I said, the Cardinal manager, Mike Matheny. Tate is now a two-time all-area player by the St. Louis Dispatch and helped his team to a Division III state championship this year in Missouri. He was taken with the pick in the 23rd round by the Cardinals. It was the 720th overall pick. Matheny batted .610 this year with 51 RBIs and 11 home runs. He signed to play at Missouri State. Mike Matheny was chosen in the 8th round, 208th overall, by the Milwaukee Brewers back in 1991. He played 13 years in the major leagues, including 5 with the Cardinals, and he's in his first year as the manager of the Cardinals after replacing longtime skipper Tony La Russa. So again, congratulations to all, and if you want to check out what all went on during the Major League Draft with high school players, Max Preps is a good place to do that. Go to maxpreps.com. Well, we want to tell you who's on the show tonight. We've got a couple of things coming your way. First and foremost, a partner here with us here at the NHSCA. His name is Dr. Jared Spencer. He is a sports psychologist. He has developed a program called Mind of the Athlete, and Dr. Jared Spencer will stop by with some great tips for parents and for student-athletes during the off season to kind of get the old brain in the right position as we head toward the 2012 and 2013 school year. Then we're going to kind of go into the Wayback Machine with the Olympics coming up in London. You remember last week or a couple of weeks ago, we talked to a high school coach who's going to be an official in the Olympics. And over the next couple of shows here, we're going to go into the Wayback Machine. We're going to have a past interview, and then we're going to look forward. You may remember Missy Franklin. She is getting a lot of publicity right now for what she's been able to do as a high schooler in Colorado, and stands a good chance as a teenager to kind of set the world on fire in London. So we're going to go back to a former interview that myself and my partner Trish Hoffman did last year when she was a sophomore and already catching all the eyes. And since that time, she's been on the cover of Vogue. She's been written about in the Wall Street Journal. So we're going to play that interview that Trish and I did with Missy. And then in the weeks to come, we're going to talk to her mom about what it's like to be the parent of one of the most famous American athletes heading into the London Games. So we've got a lot lined up for you. I want to thank all of our partners that make each and every week possible, beginning with Gatorade's G-Series. We also want to thank XCNation.com for all its cross-country news. And, of course, all of our wrestling partners, Cliff Keen, Dalamuir, All-American Wrestling Supply, the U.S. Navy. We thank you all for making all of this possible, and we ask that you go to our website and patronize all of our sponsors. Going to take a break. When we come back, going to talk to Dr. Jared Spencer. That and more. You're listening to the NHSCA Sports Hour on the Artist First Radio Network.
You've heard of being named All-Conference, but only one organization has earned the classification of being All-World: the United States Navy. Whether it's humanitarian efforts, fighting terrorism, or protecting America's freedoms, the Navy is the team that helps us all win big. To learn how you can make it to the big league, call 1-800-USA-NAVY or visit Navy.com. Navy. Accelerate your life.
Back on the NHSCA Sports Hour this evening, I'm going to welcome in a partner, a guy that I had on the show several months ago, a guy that is good at what he does, and he comes from a great area because he's from my hometown area. His name is Dr. Jared Spencer of Mind of the Athlete, a sports psychologist, and he's got a very interesting program that can help your son or daughter, if you're an athlete, can help you as well. And he's on the show now to talk a little bit about the Mind of the Athlete. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jared.
Man, I'm so excited to be with you today, Jeff.
Yeah, well, let's set the tone. It's been a while since we've had you on the show here a little bit, and I think the best way for the listeners, since our audience is growing by leaps and bounds, to kind of establish things here, let's go into, you know, what you do. You were a top-flight athlete at a high school in western New Jersey. You were a college athlete at a very good program, so you've played at all those levels, and now you're helping kids. So let's kind of talk about how you became a sports psychologist and why there's a need for it in your mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a huge need for it today. In fact, at a higher level of athletics today, you're almost doing yourself or your team a disservice if you don't have a sports psychologist in your corner. And it's really changed a lot over the years. Of course, you know, growing up here in Sulzberg, New Jersey, Easton, Pennsylvania, in the Lehigh Valley, which is a sports-rich community, as you know very well, and, you know, we saw the good, the bad, and the ugly associated with sports. And I just felt all along that I love sports, I love the mind, and I love teaching athletes about how the mind actually works so that they can unlock their potential. A big reason I do this is because I've seen again and again and again that one of the main reasons why athletes don't unlock that potential is they don't have the skills and abilities to unlock the potential in the 6 inches between their ears. And so if they can learn these skills, which is very doable, it's amazing at what they can do and how much better they can do it.
Now, this your program here, which you can learn more about, listeners, at mindoftheathlete.com, isn't just about, and I'm being a little flippant here, but be a little funny, it's not about coming in, laying on a couch. You put together a whole program. So let's talk about the Mind of the Athlete program and what it is that, again, students, student-athletes, parents can know from it, learn from it.
Okay, the Mind of the Athlete program, this is a cutting-edge sports psychology way to get the material to the athlete that's just so busy. And so what we did is we took 10 hours of content that every single athlete needs to know, every coach needs to know this, every parent needs to know this, and we packaged it on one very cool-looking flash drive, which you can see that on the website. And on this flash drive, we actually have 10 hours of content, but it's divided up into 16 videos, each with an accompanying worksheet on topics such as positive thinking, rehabbing an injury, how the mind works, confidence, all kinds of great stuff. And then also 10 CDs such as Mind of the Coach, Mind of the Parent, a guided imagery for relaxation. And the idea is that an athlete would have this flash drive, put the information onto their computer, kind of a drag-and-drop installation. Then they would take that information and put it onto their iPod, on their iPhone, so that they have it while they're traveling to and from competitions or practices, that we've got to get the content on their phone. Essentially, for an athlete today, if it's not on their phone, it's not relevant to them. Mm-hmm. And so this is a great way that a coach could buy this flash drive, pass it around to everyone on their team, and then everyone has it on all their mobile devices.
It's a great idea. Talking to Dr. Jared Spencer tonight, a partner with us here at the NHSCA, and his company is Mind of the Athlete, mindoftheathlete.com, talking about student-athletes, well, all athletes for that matter. And let's go back to my what was meant to be a flippant remark, but, you know, I know a couple of years ago, St. John Bosco out in California brought on a team psychologist at the high school level. So let's talk about the, I'm not going to say stigma, but I'm going to use that as a word. I mean, do parents or athletes still have a stigma about going to a psychologist? I know it's different in sports, but is there a stigma surrounding it?
No, not anymore. In fact, the ones that feel like there's a stigma associated are a bit of dinosaurs, really. Because, you know, the athlete today, we're talking about a 15 to 25-year-old, man, they're so open to this stuff. They're craving this stuff. They love this stuff. And so for those guys, there's not a stigma at all. In fact, the type of athlete that I work with one-on-one here in the office or via phone or Skype with kids around the country, these athletes are actually the creme de la creme. They're the cream of the crop. They're the ones that are high-functioning. They tend to come from very conscientious families, very supportive families. They basically say, hey, look, man, my son or daughter has all the physical skills and ability, and they're very gifted. But emotionally, under the helmet, they're still a 16-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. And so we want to give them the skills. We want to empower them. And so that's the type of kid that ends up coming in. Or it's the coach who's just very progressive and says, hey, I'm a 40-year-old coach, and I love what I do, and I want to find a way to continue to connect better to these athletes. And those are the coaches that are really looking for sports psychology, utilizing sports psychology. Admittedly, there are some coaches out there, and, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, I think there's a correlation between age as well. As, you know, you get coaches in the 50s or the 60s or the 70s, the resistance to the sports psychology tends to go up. And so there is some of that.
Well, I was a big fan of the Friday Night Lights book, the movie, and the TV show, and I thought one of the great lines from Dr. Spencer, from Eric Taylor, the coach on the show, you know, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. I think that sometime says a little bit of what you're talking about there. Let's discuss the change in now that you said it's more acceptable and these top athletes are doing it. What are some of the things that you're hearing from your athletes, some of the things that are modern day that parents should be aware of that kids are thinking when it comes to, you know, being a student athlete?
Well, one of the most important things that a parent would need to know about their son or daughter is that what we know, according to a study in the New York Times 2 years ago, is that our entering freshman class in the college 2 years ago had the worst-rated emotional health in the last 25 years since they even started administering the survey. And so what we know is that our young kids today, who in the last 10 years of post 9/11 have gone through a lot of trauma and drama and the recession. It's been a tough time in American history. And sports are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so what we're seeing is that the incident rate of depression and anxiety is unlike anything we've ever seen before. And so a lot of parents will say, well, it's not my son or daughter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not under my roof, or a coach might say, not on my team. And I would challenge those parents and coaches to say, really? Are you so sure? Because what I see is that it's far more prevalent of the concerns of the depression and anxiety than we even realize. So that is one of the big things that athletes are coming in for today is, you know, and particularly the anxiety, the performance anxiety is the biggest one. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's crippling athletes.
So when you have a situation where it might be a crippling situation, I mean, you were talking about having your kids come in, but this is a full circle thing. This is all family, right? I mean, you can't accomplish one without the other, meaning you need the student athlete and the parents to buy into this, correct?
Well, ideally, that's the way it would work. And so oftentimes it is the parents that will say, absolutely, we want to be part of this. You know, let's meet with you and let's connect and teach us everything we can. You know, a parent would purchase the Mind of the Athlete program. They'd sit down with their son or daughter. They'd be watching the videos together. They'd be talking about it. And that's generally how it works best. And I just had another great success story last week where a guy told me, man, I'm so thankful that that my son and I are doing this. It's been so helpful for me. And so that's ideally how it would work. But even if that's not the case, as long as the athlete's full on, I mean, at the end of the day, they're the one that has to step out on the court or on the field by themselves.
Sure.
And sports reveal everything. So we'll know in the moment of truth if they have the emotional regulation skills at that moment or not.
Talking with Dr. Jared Spencer tonight from Mind of the Athlete, mindoftheathlete.com. You can learn more by going to the website. Jared, let's talk a little bit about team sport versus individual sport, say a football, basketball, baseball player versus a tennis player or a track and field athlete. Is there a difference nowadays between those sports and what the athletes need, the individual versus the team?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, by far, what I tend to see is that the athletes that are more inclined to pursue sports psychology tend to be those athletes that are in individual sports, tennis, swimming, wrestling. Those athletes were mano-a-mano typically. That's exactly where we see more of an interest in the sports psychology. Now, the teams, athletes that play on teams like basketball or field hockey, what I tend to see there is that the coach would be more likely to bring me in to say, hey, let's work with the entire team on the camaraderie, the communication, the kinship. Let's bring in the sports psychologist to educate us as a group. And so in that situation, it's a lot more of a teaching delivery of sports psychology as opposed to the one-on-one, which sometimes is a little bit more of a dialogue or an inside-out learning experience.
Mentioned at the top that you you played your high school ball and wrestled at Phillipsburg High School, one of the top, if not the top, program in the state of New Jersey. You went on to play at Lafayette College. If you were available to yourself back in the day, what would you have talked about to yourself? What were your needs, especially at that high level of high school, where you're right, I mean, Phillipsburg, and I grew up there watching it. I mean, the town lived and died with what you kids did.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have definitely, you know, if I had a chance to go back and talk to myself about it. And again, I was very, very blessed. I went through the pressure cooker and came out really, really well. And so in that situation, I would have really reinforced, you know, just the confidence that I wish I would have developed more. You know, I was more relieved and grateful that I got through it. But now looking back in hindsight, I realized that was harder than I realized. And so that's one aspect. The other is that, you know, I've also failed on all the big stages. You know, I can remember being a 15 and 16-year-old athlete wrestling in the Easton Peabody rivalry in front of 3,500 fans and getting pinned. And in those situations, gosh, it is just, it's really tough. And so therein lies those moments where I wish I could go back to myself and say, hey, look, you know, let's keep this in proper perspective and let me teach you some things that you can do to help process that experience so that you can move forward very quickly and rebound successfully the next week. And so a lot of reassurance is probably what I would have offered myself, as well as the knowledge and techniques of how to better manage some of those moments.
Has the pressure increased when it comes to, especially in these economic times, has the pressure increased on these athletes to get that scholarship where families may not have the wherewithal to send them now? I mean, have you seen an impact on that where the kids just feel like, man, if I don't get this done this way, there may not be a future in college for me?
Oh, absolutely. I've heard from parents again and again, hey, we'd love to send our son or daughter to the school. However, if we have to pay the full rate and there's not an athletic scholarship there or some type of money coming in so they can play the sport, we simply cannot do that. And so that's a real concern. And so it is one reason why athletes will often come to me, because they realize, look, a small investment in sports psychology financially could, on the back end, produce, you know, a $250,000 scholarship if the kid gets a full ride somewhere. And so that's a big, big swing. And kids today are sharp, and they have great communication with their parents. So they are aware of the potential consequences on their college decision that's associated with the finances of their success. And so that, for some athletes, becomes a huge negative. And for other athletes, it can be a tremendous positive, and that it helps them be more disciplined, more focused. But it does create internalized stress and pressure on these athletes, and therein lies where some of the performance anxiety begins to really creep in. It's because of this extra pressure that we just haven't seen in years past, mm-hmm. like we are right now.
Sure. We're talking with Dr. Jared Spencer tonight on the NHSCA Sports Hour. He's got a cutting-edge sports psychology program called Mind of the Athlete. You can check it out at mindoftheathlete.com. Obviously, you'd love to have every athlete come to you, but it's a big world out there. So let's talk a little bit about what parents and student-athletes should be looking for when they're trying to find the right fit for them when it comes to a sports psychologist. What are some of the key things they should look after?
Goodness of fit. It's really about, I always say that, you know, counselors are like shoes. You know, if you find a good pair of shoes that are comfortable, you get a lot of wear out of them, and they'll go a long way. But if you go try on a pair of shoes and it's just, you kind of like them, but they're not a really good fit, you're not going to get much use out of them. They're going to sit in your closet, and that's it. And so it's really about the goodness of fit, and that's just a chemistry thing. So you may have to contact one or two different people or three different people and go and meet and see if it's the right fit. And so I think that's a big factor in this. Now, sometimes what I've seen is that if there's a sports psychologist or a counselor out there that's got an expertise in that area, for example, they were a cross-country runner, or maybe they did play field hockey, or maybe they played some football, there can be that connection point because they really understand at a deeper level the nature of that particular sport. And so those are a few things that you want to be looking for. The other that I'm biased to is very much this. I'm biased to finding counselors, psychologists that have a license. And so a licensed doctor is important. There are some people out there that are excellent counselors, master's level and such, or even a PhD without a license. But I do think that credibility really comes from having that licensure and that accountability to a licensing board for one's actions. So that's another factor you want to try to discern if that's available to you.
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge thing, especially when I talk to our listeners about, you know, systems out there that are in place, like for videos and all that. You got to make sure that the people are doing it for the right reasons and are accredited the way they need to be. Otherwise, you can get into a situation. Let's talk a couple current events. One that's definitely not about high school, but I think it may speak to the fact that the need for a sports psychologist never goes away from high school to college to pros. Tiger Woods gets it done at the Memorial, which, you know, making headlines today. He did it in big fashion. Let's talk about Tiger for just a second and just some of the things that you've seen out of him. Some say it's his swing, some say it's his head, some say it's both. How do you look at that?
I look at it from a totally different lens, and really what I think about is that Tiger Woods, his best golf is still ahead of him. And one reason is this. He was an amazing golfer before it all fell apart, and even when he was an amazing golfer, before it fell apart, he had a lot of secrets. And the last couple of years, he's not even been close to himself, but that's because privately in his life, although I don't know him as an individual, what we do know is that he's been going through a very difficult divorce and missing his children and living in other places. And so his world's been turned upside down. And that impacts an athlete. Their private life definitely impacts an athlete. But you know, the good news for Tiger is that psychologically, as he's adjusting, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months from this big fall from grace and making the necessary adjustments, I really think we're going to see him more and more have these breakout moments, more and more get consistency in his game. And if he can keep his mind clearer, what we always say at Mind the Athlete is clear mind, better performance. If he can keep his mind clearer by having greater balance in his life moving forward, I think his best golf is still ahead of him.
Interesting. Got Dr. Jared Spencer on the line here tonight from Mind of the Athlete, mindoftheathlete.com, a partner with us here at the NHSCA. Another current event, you and I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago on High School Football America. It was the tragic situation in Southern California. It's now been almost a month since Junior Seau took his life. Tell me a little bit about the last 30 days. Have you seen any sort of a spike in conversation over the safety? We know there's a lot of spotlight on the concussions, especially in football. But what have you seen in the last 30 days? Any change?
Well, the only change that I've seen is more in conversation. And the reason is simply because in the month of May, sports really begin to drop off. You know, some baseball that's still being played, but this is really, you know, everyone's leaving the college campuses and people are kind of going home. And so it's a bit of a quieter time. And so that's slightly unfortunate because if this was October, November, we'd have a lot more chatter going on about it. Mm-hmm. And there maybe be more action steps being implemented. But I think it's one of those things that people are at least talking about it, raising awareness about it, expressing real concern about it. But I do think that this conversation is going to be re-engaged and come realized in August, when NFL camps and college camps start opening up for football. This story is not over. It's just kind of taking a bit of a break while sports kind of quiet down right now.
Yeah, let's wrap up. And this one's a tough one to talk about, but I really want your take on it. It seems as though nowadays you can't, I read the internet more than I do open papers, but I read, 20, 25 a day that I go to regularly. And there seems to be a lot more on the front page of a high school coach that's run into a problem. It just happened recently in Utah with a teacher, with a student. There's been a situation, I don't know if you remember it, at Ohio State, where a young man from our neck of the Woods, why I'm missing a top-flight linebacker, had committed and then decommitted because he went to a recruiting visit there, and he came upon a person, had a picture taken where that person was a listed sexual offender. It just seemed there's a lot of stuff coming up on the front pages nowadays that are different than what you and I had to deal with, or maybe it's just more prominent because of the media. Can you talk a little bit about that situation? I know I just gave you kind of a wide canvas, but what's really going on here that may or may not be different from back in our day?
Yeah, my heart goes out to coaches, man. I have a huge passion to want to reach coaches and equip coaches because they are in a tough position. Look, coaches today are oftentimes moms, dads, young people establishing their career, and they're often overextended and emotionally overwhelmed. And they're dealing with athletes today with far more mental health concerns than we ever saw possible in the past. And we've got the whole parental factor, which is just really a bit crushing sometimes for the coaches. So for the coaches, we have got to give them, just like the athlete, the skills and ability on how to manage today's young people. The concerns that they have all deal with the mental side of things. It's not the X's and O's. Heck, that's the easy part about being a coach. It's dealing with, you know, that overbearing father who keeps calling, or the kid that, you know, is struggling under the pressure cooker, or the infighting, the drama, or they just can't get an athlete to lead and step up. And so we've got to give them the skills and abilities. So that's where I, you know, go back to the Mind of the Athlete program, and I just say that, man, coach, you need to know this content. And I know you're too busy, and I know you don't have time, but you're going to drive in your car, and you can pop in the CD and listen to it then, or you're going to be on the bus ride a lot this season, so you can use the video in the bus ride and show the whole team and watch it, or maybe you just listen on your iPod while you're traveling. So we've got to give them those skills and ability. Otherwise, they'll keep struggling with the same concerns, which are largely mental, and find themselves burnt out. And we can't have another coach stop coaching because of burnout.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I point out to people when we get into that conversation about, you know, some of these things that fall on the front page of the newspaper as opposed to the sports section is, you got to remember, this is still life, folks, and all the ills of society that are out there in just the general public exist in sports, and I think you're right about that. Unless you start addressing it at that coaching level, it's not going to get fixed. But Dr. Jarrett, I really appreciate you stopping by, and again, folks, if you want to learn more, you can go to mindoftheathlete.com to get a cutting-edge sports psychology program. Dr. Jarrett, have you back in about 2 or 3 weeks to talk a little bit more, but appreciate your time.
It's always a pleasure to share this stuff. Thanks so much.
Yep. Going to take a break. When we come back with more, you're listening to the NHSCA Sports Hour on the Artists First Radio Network.
The Navy Seahawk helicopter has a lift capacity of over 6,000 pounds. But when it comes to helping those around the world who need it most, they lift the hopes of millions. To learn more about how the Navy is the best place to do great things, call 1-800-USA-NAVY or visit Navy.com. It will do you and the world a load of good. Navy. Accelerate your life.
Time to turn back the clock and also look ahead at the same time. We're going to turn it back to a interview that Trish Hoffman and myself did back in March of 2011. It was with Missy Franklin from Regis Jesuit High School in Colorado at the time. She was 16 years old, and at that point she was really being called the face of U.S. women's swimming, as she was being touted as a multiple gold medal winner in the London Games, and that was, of course, about, you know, a year and a half away from even the Olympic trials, and they will take place at the end of this month in Omaha. The 2012 U.S. Olympic Swim Team Trials will be held at the Quest Center in Omaha, Nebraska, June 25th through July the 2nd. But Missy is nothing if not blowing up, I guess, at this point. There's been wonderful stories about her written on television. One that I especially enjoyed was in the Wall Street Journal, and talking about how Missy was not taking any winner's money because she wants to remain an amateur and really kind of go right at the heart of what the Olympics are about. She's now 17 years old, preparing for the Olympic Games. She still has to make the team, so Omaha, very, very important for Missy the Missile, as she's known. She's done a lot of wonderful things leading up to the trials, including the fact that she earned 5 medals, 3 golds at the 2011 FINA World Championship. And that performance, combined with 5 additional medals at the Minneapolis Grand Prix, you know, puts her on the map to become one of the stars, maybe a breakout star in the 2012 Olympic Games in London. Missy talked to Trish and myself back in March. What a sweet girl. And you could just tell why she has the ability to go to that that level that only few achieve. And if you do it on the Olympic stage, that kind of stays with you for Life. And this is the interview that we did with Missy back in March of 2011.
We have Missy here with us right now. Welcome to the show, Missy.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure, and congratulations on all of your accomplishments.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and it is quite a bit for someone your age. So let's start with how you got into the sport of swimming.
Well, when I was little, I absolutely loved the water. I mean, ever since I was a baby, just being in it, playing in it, I loved it. And my mom got me into as many sports as you could think of when I was little, just so I would know what I liked and what I wanted to do. So I started my summer club team when I was 5 years old, and I absolutely loved it. So then when I was 7, I started swimming year-round on my club team with the same coach that I have now. So
it's been a kind of a string of fun right there for you. Now, when did it really sink in that the talent you have, and I know sometimes it's hard to think about yourself and talk about yourself, but when did it sink in that the talent you have is a little bit above everybody else's? And what did you do once you kind of discovered that you were, a pretty good swimmer?
I wouldn't say that there is a specific point. Ever since I was 7 and I came on that club team, I've just been having fun with it and just enjoying it and working hard, because that's what I love so much about the sport, is how it's so easy to motivate yourself and really work hard to get your goals. And so I would say that once I qualified for trials when I was 12, that was a big step for me, and that was when I really realized that 2012 was definitely a goal that I wanted to accomplish.
Okay, so besides getting you to and from, all of your sporting events and your practices and whatnot, what other role did your parents play in your development as an athlete?
I wouldn't be who I am without my parents. They are absolutely the most incredible people I've ever met in my life. They have helped me so much. Again, 4 a.m. wake-up calls, drive me out to practice. They've flown all over the world with me, all over the country. And I think one of the best things about them is that they don't put pressure on me. And they're so supportive no matter how I swim. And that just means the world to me, that even if I have a bad race and I'm feeling bad enough, if I go to see my parents, they're not going to yell at me or get mad at me, because they know that I tried my best. So they're still going to be supportive no matter what.
That's so good to hear, and we'll get back to your parents in just a second. We heard a little interesting story about them and your Olympic trials, but let's talk about idols. I read who your idol is, but I want to hear it out of your own mouth. Who is the swimmer that you idolize the most?
Natalie Coughlin.
No surprise there. You're the woman whose record you broke just a couple of weeks ago.
So what have you learned from Natalie, Missy?
Well, honestly, just being able to be around her and just being on a team with her is absolutely a dream come true for me, and it's such an honor. Being around her and watching her swim, I've already learned so much, and she's been so helpful with everything. When I was at Short Course Worlds in Dubai, she was helping me with my start and making comments, and it's just, she's such a sweet woman, and you would never know her accomplishments if I just walked up and started talking to her. She's so humble. Like, everything about her is just amazing, and I am honestly would hope to have half of the accomplishments that she has had in her career.
Well, now, let's get back to your parents. Now, I understand your parents are Canadian, so you have dual citizenship, and then
we
read, Trish and I, that the 2008 Olympic trials, your mom wanted you to try out for the Canadian team to take a little pressure off, but you refused, said you wanted the red, white, and blue. So let's tell us a little bit about that decision and how it all came down.
Well, I'm so sorry. It kind of got blown out of proportion. I don't even know how people found that out, but she never wanted
me to. Is it true, though?
I mean, we had talked about it, but she never, asked me to actually go swim. We were honestly talking one day about it, and she said, hey, would there ever be a chance for you swimming for Canada? And I was like, nope, probably not. And then suddenly we were getting all these comments like, your mom wanted you to swim for Canada? And I was just, how did you find that out? But no, I don't think she ever really pushed for that at all. And I always have known that I wanted to swim for the U.S. I was born and raised here. I love this country, and I want to represent it, because it's such an honor to put on that cap and have the USA flag on it. So,
So you got a quick lesson and people talking about you at a very young age, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay, so Missy, let's talk a little bit about 2012. How are you prepping for your shot at the Olympic Games in London?
Well, next year is definitely going to be crazy. It'll be the big training year before trials. So my school schedule, we've actually already had a meeting, and instead of taking the whole 7 classes that are required, I'm actually only going to take 5, and that way I can get out early every other day. And that will give me more time to do more dry land training, more time for homework, just in general. And then I'll take the other 2 classes that I'm missing online. So I think that that's going to be amazing. Reed just helped so much with me, and I can't even thank them enough for everything that I've been doing. And I think next year is just going to be huge. And Todd and I, we sat down and we planned it. And I think that if we just stick to it, and if I don't put too much pressure and just keep having fun with it, but really, really work hard, then hopefully I'll be where I want to be for the trials.
Well, it sounds like you have a good plan there for your actual workouts as well as your schoolwork. But I noticed when I was doing some research and I was watching one of the videos of you swimming, to me, you appeared really tall for a swimmer. You're 6 feet tall, and you move through the water very gracefully. Do you take ballet lessons, or do you think your height is really an advantage for you?
I definitely think my height is an advantage. I've been so blessed. My mom is actually only 5'6", and my dad's 6'2". So I was really, really lucky. God definitely blessed me. So I definitely think that the height helps, just in general, with more power. And there's definitely different body types, too, that each sport will kind of adapt to differently, that'll help in different ways and be harder in different ways. So,
you're a very pretty swimmer, so it was enjoyable to watch it, because I really did think maybe you were taking some ballet classes as well.
No.
Who's got time for that, right?
I'm very clumsy on land, so probably wouldn't go over well.
Well, we're talking with Missy Franklin, Olympic hopeful swimmer from Regis Jesuit High School in Aurora, Colorado. And let's kind of go to high school now a little bit. We've been talking a lot of Olympic and everything you're doing to get there, but you're still swimming competitively in high school. You broke some records. You won a lot of gold medals. Your school won the state championship. Can you tell us how you kind of balance between international competition and swimming in the pool still at your high school? How does that all work for you, and how do you kind of separate the competitions in your mind?
Well, it's definitely hard because I kind of have 3 different teams. I have my high school team, my club team, the Colorado Stars, and then I have the USA national team. So I think that I kind of have 3 different sets of teammates. But really, whatever I'm doing, I just focus on that. And it's definitely sometimes it's weird going from, for example, Dubai back to a high school meet at a pool in Colorado, just like a high school pool. The team is definitely way different, but I don't think it really matters where you are. All that matters is just how bad you want it and just swimming, doing your best, and just working on the things that need to be worked on. And so, I mean, it really doesn't matter. You can be in some foreign place you've never been to before, or your pool that you practice in every single day. I mean, it all depends on just how hard you work and really how bad you want it and what you're willing to do for your team and for yourself. So I think just no matter where I am, just give me water and a lane and I will do the best that I can.
Well, that's a pretty good way to put it. So what did it mean to you to set the U.S. high school record in the Colorado State Championships?
It was so amazing. There is no other meet like high school state in Colorado. Oh, my gosh. It is just unbelievable. You're with all of your friends. You're with all of the fans and the parents and all the other kids from these schools. And they're so loud, and they're amazing, and there's so much energy. And it's just one of the most amazing meets there is, just because it's high school and the team aspect is so big. So being able to do that, not only for myself, but for my team, and get those points that we needed was really amazing. And just knowing that I was able to help contribute to that championship meant the world to me.
Now you beat Natalie's record, and of course you said how much you idolize her and all that. Have you had a chance to talk to her yet about that and say, oh, by the way, you don't have the record anymore?
No. I haven't actually talked to her yet. She's I'm at the U.S. National Team Training Camp right now, and I don't think she can make it here, so
okay.
I haven't talked to her since.
Well, we're just having a little fun with that. I'm just kidding about that. But, you know, one of the things you did say about Natalie is how humble she was. And I got to be honest, in some of the articles we read where your teammates or friends talked about you, they said the exact same thing about you, that despite all this stuff at 15 years old, that you're very grounded. So I know you're gonna probably pass this by, but where does it all come from? How do you keep yourself in check?
Well, honestly, I think the most important part is to let my swimming speak for me. There's really, I just have fun with it, and that's all that matters, and I just enjoy myself, and I love what I'm doing, so I just love being nice to everyone. I think that everyone deserves it, and just a little kindness can go so far, so, you know, I just love it, and just try to be nice to everyone, so.
Well, you're making me want to just come and watch you swim, so, and I live in Chicago, and I know the chances are pretty slim, but you better promise that if you get to Chicago and you're doing any swimming that you stay in touch with us.
I will, absolutely.
Well, the big question then is, what happens, and how's it going to make you feel, should you actually make the Olympic team?
You know what, there's no words to describe it. It would be unbelievable. That has been my goal ever since I was little. So right now I'm just going to work as hard as I can to get there, and cross your fingers for me, because I am going to try the best that I can. And we just have so many amazing swimmers in USA Swimming, and it's going to be such a fast meet. So everyone is absolutely incredible, and to even race against them is really special and an honor. And being able to get to know them better has been incredible, and I've loved every second of it. So I think I just, you know, need to really start working on my technique and fix the little things and really focus in on what I need to do to get where I want to be. So,
well, and that's probably why so many people say you're so down to earth, because you've already accomplished so much. You've broken records and whatnot, and you're sitting here on this radio show saying, well, I have to get to work, and I've got to improve, and I've got to get better. And most people would be, oh, you're already great, you know, so why do you need to go through that? So, well, we've been talking with Missy Franklin from Regis Jesuit High School in Aurora, Colorado, who is running and gunning and swimming her way, hopefully, to the Olympic Games in London. Thank you so much, Missy, and do stay in touch with us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
So again, that's an interview with Missy Franklin back in March of 2011 with Trish Hoffman and myself. And coming up in the next couple of weeks, Trish is going to track down Mom. And Mom's a real, real good one when it comes to email. She's always said kind things to us about that interview and what we did with her daughter. So Trish is going to get on the line with Missy's mom and talk about what it's like to be the mom of maybe the next future star of the Olympic Games. So stay tuned for that over the next couple of weeks. Going to take a break, come back and wrap things up. You're listening to the NHSCA Sports Hour on the Artist First Radio Network.
Hottest technology in the world isn't being developed in Silicon Valley. In the United States Navy, more top secret technologies are being created than ever before. Incredible machines made of stealth materials that fly by themselves. The only problem with these incredible technologies? It's a shame the enemy can't see them. To learn more, call 1-800-USA-NAVY or visit Navy.com. Navy, accelerate your life.
Want to remind you, coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to flip the switch and turn things over to all high school football talk here on the Artist First Radio Network with High School Football America. We have four guests on the show coming up for you this evening, starting in Salina, Texas, with new head coach of the Bobcats there. His name is Bill Elliott. Some big shoes to fill as he takes over for two of the best coaches ever in the 3A ranks, G.A. Moore, the all-time winningest coach in Texas, and then recently Butch Ford stepped down. So Bill Elliott, the longtime assistant, taking over, and he'll talk about filling those big shoes. We'll also have a conversation with Drew Jabera, an author from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. That's his former employer, but he's just written a book that will be released released in September on Valdosta football. The Wildcats in Georgia are the winningest program in high school football history. We'll also speak with Mark McMillan, a former NFL player known as a Mighty Mouse because of his 5'7 stature, but that didn't stop him from becoming an 8-year veteran in the NFL, and now he's turned his focus to helping student-athletes get noticed and hopefully get some scholarships at the collegiate level. He's working for Junior Rank. He's a coach there and an operations manager. So Mark's going to stop by and talk about Junior Rank and how things have changed from the time when he was being recruited over a decade ago. And we'll wrap the show up with a peek at the 2012 National Championship Chase. Steve Spiewak of Max Preps will stop by. He's released his preseason top 25. He calls them the early contenders before he puts out the final poll to start the season, the preseason poll. But Steve will stop by and talk to us on High School Football America about who has the shot at getting the 2012 mythical national championship. That's High School Football America coming up at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, top of the hour, right here on the Artist First Radio Network. Want to thank our guest tonight, Dr. Jared Spencer from Mind of the Athlete. Remember, his website is mindoftheathlete.com. Dr. Jared Spencer with some great advice for parents and students. Kind of a refresher course as we go into the summer here and figure out how to kind of get everything up in the old noggin working before the start of the 2012-2013 school year. Want to thank Missy Franklin again, although that was a taped interview that Trish Hoffman and I did with her a year ago. We wish Missy nothing but the absolute success. We hope she's standing on that top podium with plenty of gold medals around her neck in London. Of course, before that, she's got to get through the Olympic trials. She has to make the team. That's in Omaha coming up at the end of this month, June 25th. Through July 2nd. But again, Missy Franklin, a true American hero in the making, and we wish her the best of luck once she makes the team. I think it's a foregone conclusion that that's going to happen. Want to thank all of our sponsors for tonight's show that are on this tonight's show that make it all possible for us, starting with the U.S. Navy, Gatorade's G-Series, Dr. Jared Spencer from Mind of the Athlete, XCNation.com for all your cross-country news, Cliff Keen, Dollemure, and All-American Wrestling Supply. We thank them all. Please patronize them by going to our website and clicking on their banners on the NHSCA website at nhsca.com, and that's also where you can go to learn how to become a member of the National High School Coaches Association. Want to thank Corey King back in Ohio for making everything work smoothly tonight, and we thank you for listening. This is Jeff Fisher saying good night and good sports. We'll talk to you next week on the NHSCA Sports Hour on the Artist First Radio Network.